You're listening to Between the Stripes LOI podcast, powered by Diaga.ie and proudly sponsored by Flomax. Be sure to check out our brand new website, BetweenTheStripes.ie, while you can find us on Twitter at Between Stripes or on Facebook by searching Between the Stripes. Now, here are your hosts, Kieran Burke and Jonathan Breyer.
Hello everyone and welcome to the biggest Between the Stripes LOI podcast episode ever. It's Series 2, Episode 27, and it's a very special edition tonight. Dundalk FC champions again. It's a Dundalk FC special, but of course we will be speaking to Mike Ahern from Limerick FC on the situation regarding a winding up petition down in Limerick, and we'll also have Tim Clancy on the show to discuss that stunning playoff victory against Shelburne. And of course we'll be touching on all the latest topics in the League of Ireland. We'll be looking at the Irish squad, a bit of controversy there with some of the players Martin O'Neill has cut, and we'll be covering all things League of Ireland. So please, if you aren't a Dundalk fan, do stick with us. But John, there's only one place to start tonight. A 1-1 draw between Dundalk and Pats at Oriel Park, a very late Patrick Cooban goal, was enough for the Lily Whites to claim a fourth league title in 5 years. Congratulations to Dundalk FC. What a season it's been.
Fantastic season for Dundalk. I think they've been beaten three times all season in the league. I think just fantastic and worthy champions, Kieran. And they started this match, is it?
Just before you go any further. It's our biggest show ever because of the guests we have on. I totally forgot to mention it. We're going to be joined by three players from inside the Dundalk camp tonight. We're delighted to say we have Dane Massey, Chris Shields and John Mountney coming on. And as I've already mentioned, we have Mike Ahern and Tim Clancy as well. So they are two very good interviews to look forward to. But John, please take it away.
Right, I'll start again, shall I, Kieran? look, it looked like Dundalk was straight out of the traps and they had a couple of great chances early on. And how the ball didn't go in the net, I'm not so sure, because Hooban smashed the bar, came back to McElhaney, he curled it, that hit the post, and then the rebound fell to Pat Hooban, who somehow shot wide. So it was an amazing start to the game,
and the atmosphere, as you can imagine at that stage, was absolutely electric. And here I was thinking, oh, this is going to be an absolute thriller. It didn't really end up that way in the end. Pats came probably to frustrate, obviously, a new manager or caretaker manager in Gerard Bryan. He was probably looking to consolidate things slightly, and you have to give them credit, it was a good performance and they were very unlucky not to get the 3 points in the end. Dundalk, as you said, started the game like a house on fire, but their second half performance was quite sloppy. I wouldn't say they were lucky to get that winning goal, because it was a fantastic bit of play and Patrick Hooban did what he's been doing all season, but it certainly wasn't vintage Dundalk on the night.
No, and before they fell behind, Connolly volleyed over after great work from Duffy again. He's been exceptional this season, hasn't he, down that left wing? But Dundalk failed to clear a Conan Byrne free kick, and somehow the ball came across to their former player, Connor Clifford, who opened the scoring 1-0.
Yeah, an ironic goal scorer, Clifford, of course, with Dundalk last season before having to step away after that suspension he received. But look, it's good to see him back playing football and enjoying himself. And I'm sure he enjoyed that goal against his former employers.
He did, but Dundalk weren't to be denied. And it was that man, Pat Hooban. He equalised right at the end after great work from McElhaney. 1-1, the place erupted, Kieran, and Dundalk champions.
Yeah, and I'm glad you highlighted that bit of play from McElhaney, because I think it went unnoticed by many. It was a fantastic bit of playmaking from the former Oldham man. Kelly, who had just come on, made a run as well to drag his defender away, gave Hooban that extra yard, and he tucks it away with his left foot into the very bottom corner. Keeper had no chance. It was the sort of goal to sum up how good he has been this season. And if you remember, John, at the very start of the year when Dundalk had a little bit of a slow start, we spoke about that perhaps they were maybe just missing that X factor in the final third. And McElhaney was the player we mentioned that, of course, they were missing at that stage of the season. He's come back now, took him a little while to find his feet, find his fitness, but that assist there is exactly what he brings to the table.
Well, I think I mentioned it maybe last week or the week before that McElhaney just hit his strides, hadn't he? It's a bit of a slow start, which you can imagine, because he didn't have a lot of football in with Oldham in League One. But he's back, and certainly the last couple of weeks he's shown exactly what Dundalk have been missing. And he's the guy that's been pulling the strings in midfield. And and like I say, Hooban, who's been banging important goals in all season, he equalised later tonight. 26, is it, for the season?
26, record-breaking.
Unbelievable performance and worthy champion. So congratulations to Dundalk.
Yeah, obviously there's so much more to cover from this. The big breaking news after that game was the Michael Duffy deal. So we'll touch on that shortly, John. I don't usually get overly excited for interviews, but I have to say I am buzzing to speak to this man now. He's been there for the majority of the success under Stephen Kenny and Vinnie Parth. Always probably one of the first names on the team sheet, and we're going to speak to him now. Dane Massey joins us on the show. Okay, so it's time for our first interview of the night from inside the Dundalk FC camp, the 2018 League of Ireland champions, and I'm delighted to say we're joined on the line now by fullback Dane Massey. Dane, welcome to Between the Stripes LOI podcast.
Thanks, mate, for having me on.
Dane, pleasure to have you, and of course, congratulations on the other night. I was there myself, a great occasion. What a way to win it in the end. Did you think it was just going to get away? Obviously, with Cork not getting the goal down in Tala, you would have had it wrapped up anyway, but I'm sure that's not the way you wanted to do it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the players on the pitch, we had no idea. Cork were drawn in Tala, as I said. So we, as far as we knew, we had to get a result. We had to get that point. And I think that's what drove us on to the last couple of minutes. You know, we're known for scoring in the last 10, 15 minutes of game, and we tried to get our goals as late as we can as well. You know, you just got to keep going. And you see him Friday night, I think Pat came up with the second last minute he came up with the winner. And I think the place was erupted then. You know, we knew we had it in the bag then. It was a great feeling.
Maybe you didn't know over that stand side, but Sean Gannon and Patrick Hooban certainly were inquiring from the shed the score down in Tala. So I thought that was fantastic, because it just showed that even though a couple of games still to go, the players really wanted to do it the other night for the fans.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You're nothing without your fans, and the atmosphere in Oyler Park all year has been fantastic. And we didn't want to lose on Friday night and get over the line. Basically, we wanted to win in style and get that point. And at the end of the day, you're only as good as your last game. And I think Pat came up with an absolute crucial goal, which he's done all year, and it was fantastic end of the game as well. You have to give credit to Pat and Jerry O'Brien. They played really well, and it was a past player that scored against us, Conor Clifford. So Pat's played well. Conor had a great game as well, and I think it was a great spectacle for any of the fans watching as well. It was a great ending.
Yeah, and you mentioned the fans there. You're obviously one of the longest serving players within the current squad. There seems to be a real bond there between the players and the fans this year in particular, though.
Yeah, it was, especially after last year. You know, we were going for four in a row, and it was very difficult with us with the amount of players that we'd lost, and we were going through that transition period. And unfortunately, it wasn't to be. I think the fans really got behind us last year, and it gave us a massive lift going into this year, you know. And in fairness, they turned down their thousands every single week. And even the atmosphere in the European games was fantastic. And then going into a Friday night, the place was buzzing. It was great to see thousands of kids running around, and hopefully they'll stick to it and come again next year and the following years and years to come.
And this is now, of course, your fourth League of Ireland title with Dundalk. Where does that hunger to keep on winning come from then?
It's, you know, when you do one, you get great satisfaction out of it. Like, you work so hard all during the year, you come in pre-season, and you're the only one that's probably the hardest time of the year, and all you're thinking is, at this time of the year, you know, come September, October, you need to be in the mix, and the groundwork you put in January is going to be the difference, you know, and you got to keep driving, you got to, you know, other teams are lifting the standard as well, and they're trying to do what you're doing because you are the league champions, and they're always going to try and challenge you at that. So you always got to up your game, and every year it gets tougher and tougher, but I think we rise to it.
Dane, so that's the title wrapped up, but how big's the hunger in the camp to make it a double and win the FAI Cup?
Yeah, it's massive. The hunger within, like, as you said, the hunger is definitely there. There's competition for places all over the park. I think last 2 years, we've lost the cup final. And I know we've won the league, but come cup final day, there's going to be that huge hunger there. And the competition for places, as I said already, everybody wants to be on that starting 11. They want to play in that and make a difference. And I think even in training now, even though we have the league won, I think the competition, the hunger to do well, to try and impress Stephen Kenny and Vinny, it's there. It's, everyone wants to play in that starting 11. And I know the league's wrapped up and we have 3 games left, but everybody wants to still be starting. No one's taking their foot off the pedal, which is a great thing as well.
No, that's fantastic to know. And I suppose, it's, you know, looking ahead, you'll be back in Champions League next season. So I suppose the aim is just to go one step further than he did a couple of years ago.
Yeah, exactly. I think this year now with the League One, I think coefficient goes up again. I think we're on to 7. And that's going to make a huge difference. So we'd be seeded in the first round of the Champions League next summer. So, which is a massive result for the club. You know, they've done so well. So if we can get through that first round and we get into the second round again, if we even lose into that, we go down into the higher stages in the Europa League, which is huge. And as everyone knows, the rewards, the money, the benefits for the club is absolutely huge. And I think we're all striving to do well. Like, we want to succeed again. Like, the new players in our squad this year, like, the first question will be, like, what was it like playing in the Europa League? And, like, even we do a little bit of coaching, and the kids are all asking, like, what were stadiums like to play in? And it's a special time in your career, and you want to reach that level again before you finish up. And, like, we have the opportunity next year, and it's going to be fantastic.
Dane, going back to the start of your career, I see you started with your youth career with Cherry Orchard, and you were in a team with a couple of other players that have gone on to have good League of Ireland careers. So what is it about Cherry Orchard that produces so many League of Ireland players and players that go on to do well in England and so on?
Yeah, well, at the time, Cherry Orchard were playing in the Mill Cup, and it attracted players from all over the country. I remember Willie John Coyle, he was coming from Waterford, and he used to stay in my house on a Friday night. We were only 13, 14, you know, and he was making a massive commitment at that age. It was crazy, really. And then we had another player from Limerick and another player from the North, and their parents were driving them down on the day, and it was a massive commitment. But I think out of that Cherry Orchard team, I think 9 and 10 went away to play in England. Now, I think most of them are at home, but I don't know, it's a good club, it has a good history there, and obviously they play in the Mill Cup every year, which has a huge pull as well, you know.
And then just going back to touching a point you raised earlier, you were talking about competition within the team. I think it's been fair to say probably over the last couple of seasons you've been one of the first names on the team sheet for Stephen Kenny, but this season Dean Jarvis has come in, he's performed well in his first season at the club, he's put you under a little bit of pressure. Do you think that's important for the team?
Yeah, it's huge, you know, you need to have that competition there, you can't rest on your laurels at all, you know. I think that's why we've gone on to do so well this year, is because we have the likes of Stephen Fowler and Dean Jarvis, all players that play anywhere in the league and start comfortably, and they're stepping in. Like, I think Stephen Fowler played the first 10, 11 games this year for us, and he was fantastic. And Dean Jarvis, I know when I'm not on form, Dean has stood in for me, and he's played really well as well, and it's then up to me then to get my place back. But I think that's vital in any team. You need strength and depth, and within training you need that competition there to raise the standard up. And if everyone's hungry to play, you're giving Stephen Kenny a real problem, you know.
And over the last couple of days, I have to say I've never seen anything like it. Our Between the Stripes Twitter feed has been going absolutely ballistic over an article on our site, betweenthestripes.ie, regarding Patrick Hooban and whether or not he should be playing for Ireland. Now, to go back a couple of seasons, I remember very well there was calls of Massey for Ireland. Have you given up hope on that ever happening? Is there still the dream of pulling on the green jersey?
He could call up a number of League of Ireland players, and I think Pat is one of them, but I don't know if Martin O'Neill will be the man to do. You know, Graham Burke went over to Preston, and next of all, he's in the Ireland squad as well. Sonny Maguire, you can say the same thing. I don't know if he's going to take the risk, but if he ever did, I think he'd be pleasantly surprised with the standard. I think Pat Hogan would be the ideal man at the minute, you know, with the striker crisis for the Irish team. I've no doubt he could step up to that standard, but will Martin O'Neill take the risk? Will he be the manager? And I personally, I don't think so myself.
John is shaking his head here, and I think he's getting sick of me bringing this up every single week on the show. For me, there's absolutely no doubt about what Patrick Hooban beat to play for Ireland. But Dane, look, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on. Thanks very much for giving us your time. Just before we let go, I have to ask you about the post-match celebrations the other night. I believe you lost something.
We were celebrating in the change room, and unfortunately one of the bottles of champagne, Jamie McGrath jumped up singing Champion, he flicked me in the field and I lost my front heel. So I had to try not to laugh.
Yeah, I noticed a few of his photos after the game. He wasn't showing the teeth, so I thought something must have happened.
A disaster, all right. But no, it didn't dampen the night at all, really.
Dan, absolutely superb stuff. Thanks so much for joining us, and best wishes for the cup final coming up. I'm sure it's going to be a great occasion, not just for Dundalk, but for Irish football.
Cheers, lads. Thanks, Ken. Thanks, John.
Thanks, Dan.
Between the Stripes LOI podcast is proudly sponsored by Flomax. For all your compressed air, vacuum and industrial equipment needs, simply visit flomax.ie.
Okay, Kieran, well, in the other matches, Shamrock Rovers 0, Cork 0, and that put the death knell on for the title for Cork. They needed to win that one.
Yeah, you always had the feeling Cork probably weren't going to get the result they needed here to keep that title race going. It wasn't really a race, but to keep the title out of Dundalk's hands for another week or two. From a neutral's point of view, John, I'd be a lot more disappointed with the result from a Shamrock Rovers perspective. They're at home, they're playing a team in Cork that were pretty much down and out in their chances of regaining that title. Rovers had a couple of chances, but really, if they have serious ambitions of going on and pushing on next season and trying to close that gap on the top two, this is the sort of game they should be winning.
Yeah, and when we look at the Rovers' chances, Kieran, they came mostly from midfield. Mm. Ronan Finn had a couple of chances early on. He had a header that was cleared off the line, and he had a good second chance from a header as well. Aaron Green, he had a great run, but he fired straight at Cherry and laid on Kavanagh, forced to save from Cherry. But I have nothing too positive to say about Cork neither, but going back to Rovers, you can't help thinking they need a striker.
It has to be the priority now for next season. Dan Carr's been in there, he's blown hot and cold. Gary Shaw's blown hot and cold. Green's come in, he's had a run of games, he hasn't exactly lit Rovers up. There's a couple of other positions. I think they just need a couple of experienced players to go in with the younger players like Bulger there that they have at the moment, just to keep things a nice blend going. Obviously, you have to credit Stephen Bradley for solving the goalkeeping crisis he had. I mean, he has Bazunu now until the end of the season, but next year, obviously, he'll go to Man City. But in Manus, he has just one of the most experienced keepers in the league. They're not conceding as regularly as they were at the start of the year, so I suppose you could say he's tightened up the defence a bit, but it really does all go back to having a finisher. And they've never really had anyone since Gary Twigg left.
No, and I think like you were talking about Daniel Carr there, he's just not getting the amount of goals, is he, that you need at that level as a striker.
At times he's playing out wide as well. So
I suppose they played Aaron Green through the middle a bit more, haven't they?
Obviously he gives you the pace, but could they maybe look to play two up top next season if you had someone like a Carr or Shaw and Green running off them?
I don't know. I
know that's something we've touched on a good few times this season.
Yeah, he seems very set in playing the one up front, doesn't he? So I'm not so sure, but it's something he's going to have to fix, you know.
Seems to be a bit of a trend across the league, across modern football, really, the one man up front. But yep. It's certainly going to be something Rovers are going to have to look at for next season. But we'll move on to the next fixture now, John. Bohemians, they took the lead. It looked like their fantastic form was going to continue. But obviously, with their eyes been on that semi-final, which we'll touch on later, they eventually lost out 3-1 to Waterford, and this was a crucial result in the race for Europe.
Yeah, of course, this was almost a second string team that had done so well a couple of weeks ago. And looked great to start off with Christian Morgenson. He opened the scoring after a great cross, 1-0. But then Waterford, they came more into the game, and it was a couple of old heads that did really well for them. Sander Puri, he equalised to turn in a cross 1-1. He's just Mr. Reliable, isn't he?
Yeah, he's got a couple of goals this season from midfield. Obviously, an Estonian international. I think probably maybe there's even a little bit more expected from him. I know he had an injury last season, so he's still finding his feet this year. I think he could be a big player next season for Waterford.
I agree. It was a very unfortunate error from Paddy Kirk that brought around the second goal. He made an awful error.
I thought that was one of the strangest goals of the season.
Yeah, he brought down the Puri, as we said, and Stanley Abora hit the penalty to
Abora
make it
2-1. Abora has a lovely way of hitting those penalties. He just caresses them into the bottom corner.
Yeah, exactly. And we've talked about him. He's done very well at times this season, hasn't he? Mm-hmm. I think they'll be wanting a bit more out of him next season. But Noel Hunt made it 3-1 after, again, I could say, some comical defending
from
Bowes.
Yeah, sorry, it was the third goal I'm thinking of. That was one of the strangest I've seen this season, I have to say. But your man, Noel Hunt, you had him in the St. Mel's Brewery prediction game last week when we were picking out goal scorers, and he's come up trumps for you there.
He has indeed. And, you know, it's pretty much guarantee Waterford's position in Europe next season.
Well, what has guaranteed it now for Waterford is the fact it's a Dundalk-Cork final, so even fourth place will do. Obviously, there was a lot of talk talk online about Waterford's situation, whether they'll need dispensation, etc. But I was reading quotes from John Delaney from earlier on in the season. I think he gave a speech during the FAI, the open week they always have, and I think he was saying that pretty much they'll get any situation like this for a League of Ireland club sorted. So you would expect to see Waterford in Europe next season, and it's been a great achievement considering it's their first season back in the top flight.
It has, and they'll be wanting to push on next season as well. They won't be satisfied with just qualifying. You can see them up and with a couple of astute signings, I think they'll be wanting to challenge the top two.
I think once this European status is rubber stamped, that they know there's nothing that's going to take it away from them, let it be on the field or off the field, I think you're going to see some major investment from Lee Power there. They've brought in some big name players. I mean, Noel Hunt has been fantastic since he signed. You're looking at the likes of Heary aboard. They've been great signings.
Yeah, Akinadi's not really paid off, has he?
No. So do they give him another season? Does he become a squad player? These are the big decisions Anne Reynolds is going to have to make if he's the man that you would imagine they're surely going to keep on, considering he got them up last season, he's got them into Europe now.
I'd be very, very shocked if Alan Reynolds wasn't there next season.
So, look, hopefully some major investment, and Waterford could be the ones, as we've spoken about a few times, to go and push that top two.
They could, yeah. Sligo beat Bray in this, it was a cracking occasion, wasn't it? The 90 years of Sligo Rovers.
Yeah, and over 2,500 people turning up at the showgrounds, and when you consider that this was really what you would call an end of season game, not an awful lot on the line for either side, even though this result did see Bray relegated, but we knew that was coming for many months now. It's great to see such a crowd turn out at the showgrounds.
I have to say, Gary Cronin, since he's gone to Bray, he's had a miserable time there, hasn't he?
He had a very difficult start, John. You have to remember they played Dundalk, Rovers, I think it was Waterford as well, so very hard to get any momentum early on. And then after that, the life has been a lot of young players in the team. Very difficult for them. I think he knows himself, without admitting it publicly, that when he came in, he was coming in for next season in mind. And it's a huge off season for Gary Cronin now, and we're wishing him the very best, because we know him from his time here at Longford. Lovely guy and a great coach, it has to be said, and I'm sure he will make a great manager.
Yeah, I just hope they stick with him for next season.
Oh, they will, John. Yeah, he'll be given the chance. Yeah,
good. Sligo, obviously the great crowd behind this, and Keelan McAleer, he headed home to make it 1-0, but
a player that we spoke about so much in the pre-season shows and at the start of the year, that we had so much hope after his great performance for Harps, but like a lot of his Sligo teammates, he just hasn't really sparked to life. But out of all the new signings that come in, he's probably been one of the better performers, and you'd like to see him kick on next season.
Oh, definitely, because he's got the ability, Kieran. There's no doubt about that. Bray, though, surprisingly levelled. Jake Ellis made it 1-1, but that man who's on absolute fire at the moment, Mikey Drennan, he headed in. To be fair, he was unmarked, but that finished the game off 2-1 to Sligo.
Yeah, great finish from Mikey Drennan. It's great to see him back in goal, scoring form. But as you said, Sligo pretty much safe now. They won't have to play in any sort of playoff situation. But Bray will be in the first division next season. And I think that leaves us with just one more fixture. It was Limerick who were defeated in front of their smallest home crowd of the season, Derry City, with a 1-0 win.
And, you know, it's disappointing from Limerick. They, you know, the talk of financial worries, and what they don't want is the crowd just going dwindling away, because that's just going to make life even worse for them. Their goalkeeper was impressed, Holland. He saved from Ronan Hale. He sprung the offside trap early, and he saved well from a Ben Fisk shot from range. Fisk's playing really well at the moment,
yeah,
isn't he?
Yeah, he's really come into his own since he scored prior to that League Cup final, and then he put in a good performance in that final as well, and also got on the score sheet recently against Dundalk. So a little bit of a hot spell, and as we said on last week's show, you just wonder if maybe international recognition could be on the way for him.
Well, he's played for Canada before, hasn't he? So you think a recall could be on the cards, because he's performing well at the moment. So it was one of the Hale brothers that opened the scoring after the through ball. I had a bit of a cheeky gamble with the prediction league last week, didn't I?
I foolishly gave it to you. I think kindness has killed me there, because you won again last week.
Yeah,
to give it an 11-2 lead.
Yeah, 3-1, I believe it was, wasn't it?
It was 3-1. Yeah.
Even though you changed the rules.
Even though I changed the rules.
Not too much to speak positively about for Limerick. There was a free kick late on that Doherty saved, but that was about it. And it's hard to see how those Limerick players can get up for these matches now.
Yeah, and you're saying there wasn't much to write home about from a Limerick perspective. Even though Derry won the game, it's not really something to get too excited about either, is it?
No, but look, it's still 3 points, isn't it? But very disappointing season, despite that League Cup win.
Yeah, I see there was just a couple of articles there questioning the future of McInniff, so I'd imagine he'll go, to be honest, John. Ali Roy's been sensational since he's come in. Will he be there next season? It's a huge task for Kenny Shields, and he doesn't exactly seem to have the crowd on side at the moment, so you just wonder if a poor start next season could spell trouble for Derry.
Could be, but certainly from the Limerick side, though, we need to we're going to chat to Mike Ahern now, find out a little bit more about the financial troubles there.
So on a night where we've discussed the highs of Dundalk FC's championship performance this season, we have to touch on the very worrying news coming out of Limerick in recent days. It seems, according to reports, that a winding up order has been issued against the football club, and we're joined on the line now by our regular Limerick FC correspondent, local radio personality and broadcaster down in Limerick. It's Mike Ahern. Mike, welcome back to the show.
Hi Kieran, good afternoon.
So Mike, really at this stage of the season, you'd imagine we'd be having you on to look ahead to this playoff game that's going to come up. Obviously Finn Harps and Drogheda are going to square off this weekend, and the winner of that two-legged tie will play Limerick in the playoff relegation promotion final. But unfortunately, as I said, these reports have emerged in the last couple of days. Can you shed any more light on those for us?
Yeah, I think there was a bit of an overreaction to the Phoenix magazine's article during the week. I think a lot of people knew since mid-September that the writing was on the wall. There's a lot of people out there, believe it or not, that do credit checks on companies. And Munster Football Limited were listed for a petition by the Revenue to the High Court at that stage. So look, it's not new news as such. And I think a lot of people knew this day was coming a fair bit off. Who knows what will happen on the 22nd of October when it's before the High Court. But I think one thing is for sure, and Tommy Barrett touched on it at the weekend, is that Pat O'Sullivan is a fighter and he'll come out fighting in this regardless of the situation. It seems like only a week ago that he took over the club, but it was back in 2009 where he first invested. And, you know, we've enjoyed some really, really good times. Pat Scully spent a lot of money to get us promoted out of the First Division, and Stuart Taylor had a lot of money at his disposal and brought in some really high-profile players from the UK. We went, of course, to Thomond Park and played our soccer there, and since then, it slowly started to ebb away. When Neil MacDonald came in, maybe the budget wasn't as high, and certainly since Tommy Barrett took over the reins at the start of the season, you felt from minute one Limerick were facing a real, real uphill battle. So it is gloomy at the moment. This season alone, we've had strikes from players that were threatened that never materialised. We've had unpaid wages. We've had budget cuts. So I think for Limerick to be worried about a playoff game is probably the best case scenario at the moment. But as you know, there are far more battles to be fought on and off the pitch.
Yeah, that's a fair point you make there, Mike. But you're just making the point there that maybe there's been an overreaction to the article that revealed this winding up order. But I suppose from a supporter's point of view, and maybe from an outsider's point of view, from people that aren't involved like yourself down in Limerick, it is easy to overreact and panic a little bit when you see a headline like that. So from your point of view, Mike, is there any danger at all that we mightn't see Limerick see out this season?
I don't think there's any danger myself. There's rumours, I suppose, in the past couple of days that the full wages weren't paid up for this month. So unless something materialises on a player strike front, which I completely don't think will happen, I think everything that has been told to the players will be honoured in the coming days. And look, it's a vital time. Yeah, from the outset, of course, it looks bad. Looks like winding up order, High Court petitions, revenue, but all these things, you know, can be offset fairly quickly. I mean, it's Munster Football Club Limited that are before the High Court. Yes, they hold a licence for Limerick FC, but you and I have both seen down through the years that clubs are very quickly and easily taken over, and revenue debts can be settled pretty quickly. Pat O'Sullivan has maintained for the last 3 years, and he's come out and said it at the start of every year, that he cannot continue to finance Limerick FC on a personal basis anymore. So this day was always coming down the line for me, and we touched on it, I think, probably a year ago on this podcast, or a little after, that Pat O'Sullivan was continuing to make those pleas this year. And despite the fact that Tommy Barrett's budget was cut at the start of the season, it was further cut in the middle of the season. This was after we took a chance on signing injury-prone players like Darren Dennehy. Daniel Kearns was also there. Connor Clifford was given an opportunity. And yet somehow Limerick have still managed to finish second from bottom despite the cuts, despite the plethora of young local players that are having to be played. So look, going back to the original point in the question, it's no real surprise. Yes, from the outside, it looks very bad. I'd be very surprised if Limerick Football Club didn't exist past this summer. I think it will always exist. The big talking point on Shannon's side, though, is there somebody out there that is brave enough to take the club right now, whether they know Limerick will be a Premier Division club or not? Because as you and I both know, the money is in the Premier Division, the bigger crowds is in the Premier Division, the chance to attract better players comes from the Premier Division. And if Limerick weren't in that Premier Division, well, will any potential investor see any investment value at all in getting involved with Limerick SC? One thing is for sure, Pat O'Sullivan won't continue to finance Limerick after this summer.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question to you, Mike. Obviously, we've seen a lot of new investment come into the league recently, most notably Peak Six at Dundalk. Why do you feel a club like Limerick are struggling to find someone to come in there, despite Pat O'Sullivan's continued pleas for new investment, for a new life in the club? I mean, you look at the facilities there, the new stadium, the great fan base, the history of the football club, you'd think it would be an attractive prospect.
Yeah, you probably touched on the most important word there, which is history. And Limerick Football doesn't have a history of having trusted owners, unfortunately. And look, whether people like hearing that or not, there isn't a huge amount of investment or love from the business community, because a lot of them maybe have felt the pinch of not having their debt settled with the club in the past. And look, there's been rumours of a lot of local companies that have been burnt as such in the past 12 months or so. It's not a nice thing to happen. And look, that will always err on the side of caution for business people. How would you drum up that kind of support and that love for the club again? Yes, there's a good core of 600-700 supporters going through the gates at the moment. And when times are good, it touched on 2,500. And we even showed in the playoff game against Finn Harps 3 years ago that we could get almost 5,000 for a game in a playoff situation. So look, the support, the appetite is always there. You see Limerick Junior Soccer is continuing to be very strong year on year. We've teams competing in provincial and national finals. It just needs the right owner. It needs somebody that will be trusted, somebody that people know that when they get behind them, that they're going to get full value for their money. And Pat O'Sullivan delivered on all that. It's just he can't focus any more of his personal finance into the club anymore. His other outside businesses like Galty Fuels have been liquidated. So, look, the man has poured absolutely everything into Limerick SC. Whether or not that would deter another group from taking over, I'm not so sure. Because, look, let's be honest, if you can get European football, the football club pays for itself. But is there somebody brave enough out there to take that gamble? Personally, I don't think it'll have to be a fans group that'll come in to run the club. I think that would just be too hard to manage. Even though Cork have made a real success of the way things went with them, and arguably Limerick are going in the same direction. But I think a couple of shrewd businessmen, a couple of shrewd signings, and then who knows, the world is certainly your oyster down here in Limerick, because like with Munster Rugby or like with the Limerick Hurling Team or like any successful team down in this region, if you are successful, Limerick people will come out in huge, huge numbers to support you. And that's why they say Limerick is a sleeping giant. Unfortunately, it has not been realised in recent years, despite the fact that the investment was certainly there from Pat O'Sullivan. But unfortunately, I think some bad decisions were made in the last 4 or 5 years in particular. Some managerial decisions, some player recruitment, some off-field decisions. It's been a mixture that's turned into a really bad situation for the club.
Yeah, it's certainly a complex situation down in Limerick over the last couple of years, Mike. And unfortunately, we're almost out of time, such a tight schedule on tonight's show. So I'm going to leave it with this final question. You've mentioned there the 5,000 crowds, the 3,000 crowds we've seen in the past at Limerick. But that defeat against Derry at home was the lowest crowd of the season. Is it crucial now that the people of Limerick get out and support their football club and rally behind them for these playoff games coming up? And of course, with this winding up petition in mind, all the finances the football club can get could be crucial to its survival.
Oh, absolutely. And look, if Limerick people do want senior soccer in the region, then they simply have to come out and support the game. There's no point talking about it when it's gone. People have an opportunity at the moment now to get out and support Tommy and the team. And to be fair to Tommy, he's put up with so much off-field issues this season. It's been very hard for him in his debut season as manager to really concentrate on the field matters. But he's churned out some really, really good young talent. And I think a lot of people who wouldn't normally see Premier Division soccer, and a bit like Finn Harps and Drogheda supporters, when they get to see the likes of Carlos Sullivan and Will Fitzgerald play, there's some really exciting talent coming through Limerick. Unfortunately, they're just not in the right environment at the moment. They've been thrown in at the deep end. They've been asked to play week after week. It's an awful lot on the legs of 19-year-olds. But look, I think they'll come good in the playoffs. I think they'll have enough, whether it is Finn Harps or Drogheda. But yes, the support has to be there. The first leg result will be massive. You could even argue, Kieran, if Limerick went and won the first leg by a couple of goals, you wouldn't probably see a huge crowd at the Markets Field the following Friday night. If the game is in the melting pot, though, I think we could see a huge, huge crowd. Senior soccer is very important to a lot of people in Limerick. For them, it's huge that Limerick stay in the Premier Division. Then you always have a chance to build and attract investment. But we spent 19 long years in the First Division. And I know as a long-suffering Longford fan, you're starting to feel the pinch of being in that First Division too long now. Limerick have to stay in the Premier Division. And then there's a chance to build. And I think someday, and hopefully sooner rather than later, you'll see the realisation of what a big senior soccer club in Limerick can do. And I think it'll be something pretty special.
Mike, on that point, we'll leave it there. Thanks once again for joining us. Some excellent analysis on the situation at Limerick. And best wishes for the rest of the season.
Thanks, Kieran.
Enjoying the show so far? Why not leave us a review on iTunes? Want something featured on next week's show? Get in touch via Twitter at Between Stripes. Or find us on Facebook by searching Between the Stripes. Finally, our new website address is www.betweenthestripes.ie. Enjoy the second half.
So a great insight into the situation at Limerick, as always, from Mike Ahern, and our thanks to him for joining us. John, let's look at that FAI Cup semi-final replay, I should say. It was a Turner's Cross. I think a bigger crowd than a lot of people expected turned out from a home perspective. 700 away fans from Bohemians. It was a brilliant atmosphere. But unfortunately for those Bose fans, their journey is over. There will be no Aviva Stadium final for them. It's a fourth final in a row between Dundalk and Cork, thanks to a 2-1 victory.
Yeah, and we did have a discussion as to whether Bo's chance had gone, you know, in the first leg with that late penalty decision. And sure, it proved just a bridge too far for Bo's this match. And it's a shame, like, because as you said, they had fantastic travelling support down there.
Yeah, I just felt from watching the game, particularly the first half, it wasn't the Bo's of the past couple of weeks we've seen. They didn't get on the ball, they didn't keep it on the ground, passing the nice football they've been playing this season. They really struggled to get their foot on the ball. I'm not sure whether the occasion was too much for them or whether, as you said, that decision might have just still been in the back of their mind. They felt hard done by.
I think you just have to give John Caulfield a bit of credit, to be honest, Kieran, you know, because he nullified a lot of...
He doesn't get much these days.
Not from you, he doesn't know. But you know,
you're not lying to yourself.
But he's, you know, he nullified their attacking threats, and that first half really... you know, the game was almost over at the end of the first half. Cummings opened the scoring. It was a header from a free kick set piece. So a bit surprised with the amount of space he had.
It was very poorly defended because it was quite a low ball in. So you would have thought a Bo's man would have been there to clear it away. But it's found its way all the way through to the back post and Cummings has finished it off.
Then an almost like a typical Cork goal, you could say. Long ball flicked on. Shepherd runs onto it, rounds the keeper. He makes it 2-0. And you think that was pretty much game over at half-time.
Yeah, because at that stage of the game, Bo's, they weren't really getting into it, but there was a couple of moments where Keith Ward picked up the ball in space and you were just looking for him to do something. And you always felt from watching that first half that if anyone was going to make something happen, it would be Ward. And then they've got caught by this sucker punch out of nowhere. It's a long ball. It's flicked on. I think it might have been Cummins that won the header. And Shepherd has beaten the two Bohemians men to the ball. And he's rounded the goalkeeper and finished it off very well. And he let the Bulls fans know about it as well by cusping his ears. He was getting a bit of stick from them on the night.
Oh dear. Right. Second half. I mean, there's only one thing we can talk about in the second half. What is goal of the season for me? An absolute rocket from Ian Morris.
I tweeted that it was goal of the century. Now, I might have been caught up in the moment, but
you got a bit too excited.
It's the first ever League of Ireland goal to garner over 1 million views on Twitter.
But what an absolute hit.
What?
I'd say that's a one in a million shot. You know, that's a row. It could go into row Z one day.
They took a couple of shots from maybe 10, 20 yards closer in after that, which would still be considered long range distances, and they flew hopelessly over the bar. So, yeah. For Morris to score from just inside the half, it was absolutely stunning. And the technique he used to hit it, he's been known to score some long range hits like that, but my God, he'll never hit one better than that.
No, absolute superb hit. And take a bow, Ian Morris, as somebody used to say. You know, goal of the season for me. Absolute blinder.
Unfortunately, though, it's no good to him or Boas now because they couldn't find an equaliser in the last 15 minutes as hard as they pushed, but they never really created anything despite the pressure. And, as we said, it's a fourth final now between Cork and Dundalk.
Yeah,
obviously, we'll have a cup final special as we do every year, but just briefly, how do you see that one playing out this year? Is it going to be another tight and cagey affair?
Well, just wake me up at 90 minutes, I think, Kieran. No, I hope not. I hope they go out with a bit more of an open attitude to this final because, you know, it's the pinnacle of the season, isn't it, really? And
I'm shaking my head, John.
I know, and it's been dire the last few, but I'm clutching at straws, Kieran. The only thing that has me
a bit more enthused about this season, the FEI seem to finally be getting their act together in some sort of marketing of the final. I'm sure you might have seen it. They're giving free tickets to under 16 teams.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
So that should help boost the figures a little bit. But you want to see some proper marketing for this game. I mean, what this Dundalk team has done over the last couple of years has been historic. Cork are looking for three cup wins in a row. That's historic in its own.
Yep.
It's the easiest sell in the world, John, but yep. The FBI just don't seem to ever really get behind it.
Well, they might be doing this year, Kieran, and let's just hope it's going to be a good match this
time. I just hope this rubbish of Ticketmaster putting tickets on sale 2 weeks before the final and only having a couple of crappy little sections in the corner of the stadium somewhere open isn't going to be the way again this year, because it's just no way to attract neutrals to a final.
Fair, they were selling the tickets earlier on for a tenner in the better sections as well, so you know they've already been selling them there. So
I mean, you have two great teams, you have cheap as chip tickets, you have a brilliant stadium, a great atmosphere every single year, it's on television as well. You could not have an easier sell than this. I mean, the women's GAA final got 50,000 people in this year. Now, I know Dublin were involved there, so that obviously is always a help. But come on, the FEI, come on, guys. This is the easiest sell in the world. Please do something different this year.
Well, let's hope that there's more than 25,000 in it, yeah. You know, and it's a good occasion, so. But anyway, look.
Just to walk up on the day, let's just say that, like last year, the sun was out last year, it was a great day. But even just to try and walk up and buy a ticket on the day was such a hassle. I remember I had a couple of premium level tickets because I have an FEI season ticket, but I brought a mate along who wanted to just get a ticket on the day. Went up to the box. As you said, it was only about 25,000 that was going to show up. And he was told all he could buy was a premium ticket for, I think it was €35 or something.
Ouch.
Like that. Come on.
Yeah, I know. Kieran, you're not going to let this one lie, are you?
No. Right, come on, before I get all worked up, let's move along.
We were spoiled this week because we're going on to the playoffs now, and what a cracker this was. Dry the shells. What a shame it wasn't on telly for a start.
Why did you say that? That's going to trigger me now as well.
What have I done?
Every single season I say this, the playoffs is, bar the cup final, in my opinion, is the pinnacle of every League of Ireland season. You're guaranteed drama, you're guaranteed big crowds, and it always seems to bring up these crazy games, John. And this is surely going to go down as one of the most dramatic games in playoff history.
Well, what a cracker. I mean, 1-0 up from the first leg, weren't they, Shells? And Rhys McIntyre, two yellows in the first 10 minutes to get sent off. Don't know what's happening there. Sean Brennan makes it 1-0 to Dryden. So that's 1-1 on aggregate. And then James English, an absolute horror two-footed tackle, Kieran. Shells are down to 9. This is still the first half.
It looks like, at that point, it looks like Shells are simply imploding.
Yeah, and then Chris Lyons in the second half, 2-0. He makes it 2-0. There's half an hour to go.
The floodgates surely have to
game
open
over. Surely game over. But no, 9 men Shells. They come back. Adam Evans, he rounds the keeper. makes it 2-1 to take it to extra time. And all credit to Shells, they hold out in 30 minutes of extra time with nine men, and probably most of the second half, and take it to penalties. And it's that man, Paul Skinner, makes two saves to make sure that Drogheda go through. But what an amazing match.
Unbelievable. I was following the updates on Twitter and I was refreshing it like mad. I was just so engrossed in this. And I seen that Owen Heary did the classical managerial thing. He takes off one of his defenders in the last couple of seconds of extra time. He throws on David O'Sullivan, a proven penalty taker, and he goes and scores in the shootout, but it's still not enough. Paul Skinner is the hero. But you've got to say it's probably harsh on Drogheda now that there's such a quick turnaround. Obviously, they'll have home advantage in this first leg, but I feel against this Harps side, who are just such, it's probably the worst possible opponent Drogheda could have after such a tough and bruising encounter over two legs with Shelburne.
Because they're going to get the same against Harps.
That's the point I'm making here. I feel that they probably need to get even more than a goal lead in this first leg.
Well, they definitely need to do well this first leg, because, I mean, it's not easy going to Harps, and I can't fancy them if they don't get a lead in the first leg. It's going to be tough because they'll be shattered after that match, Kieran.
Shattered.
Not just physically, but mentally as well. The only thing is, they could possibly go, you know, try and keep the high of that result, but
it's very difficult. Even when you look at other sports, I think of something like darts, and you often see these incredible semi-finals in like the World Championships where an underdog knocks out someone like Phil Taylor, and then they go into the final and they get absolutely battered because emotionally that was their final. And you're just looking at Drogheda now, they've come through an absolutely incredible, you can call it a semi-final really, because if they're to get through this game against Harps, then they're into the final. So they've done so much, but yet they're so far away.
Well, look, I think we should get a manager's view on it. He wasn't there. He was obviously in the stands for that one. But let's talk to Tim Clancy and see if he's recovered from it.
Yeah, I'd imagine the only thing worse than being on the touchline for your heart rate is being in the stands, because you must just feel absolutely helpless at that stage.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm sure Tim is going to let us give us some insight on that. And we're joined on him by the line now. So switching our attention to the other club in County Louth now. And folks, what a game last night in the playoffs. I've always said the playoffs are the highlight of every League of Ireland season. They really do not get enough media coverage. And that encounter last night between Shells and Drogheda at Tolka Park is a game that will live long in the memory. And I'm delighted to say we're joined on the line now by the victorious manager on the night, Tim Clancy. Tim, welcome to Between the Stripes LOI podcast.
Good to be back. How are you here?
Tim, how's the heart rate after that? Obviously, you were in the stand, suspended from the touchline, but I'd say you're a bit shaken still today.
Yeah, it was, as you said there, it was a bit of a mad game, all right. And to be honest, we could have lost it in the end. Shells had a great chance right near the end of the game, and even going down to nine men, they only made a few changes that really helped them, and they sat in and were very resilient, and listen, we were lucky enough to get through, so we're happy enough.
Yeah, I think a lot of people felt that maybe your work was done in the first leg. Obviously, only a 1-0 lead, a very dangerous lead to take to such an intimidating ground like Tolka Park against a Shell side with so much goal threat in their team. But then for Shells to go down to nine men, for a still to go to penalties, you must have really felt that maybe a chance had been missed there big time.
Yeah, listen, when we knew going to Tolka was going to be difficult. We played three league games with them this year, and there was the odd goal in the three games. Sean Brandon had a free kick from 30 odd yards in injury time to win the game 1-0 for us, and the other two games were draws, so there was very little in it going into the playoffs, and then they beat us 1-0 at our place. Listen, they have goal threats throughout their team, but especially with the delivery from Bob Fitzgerald, I think he's probably got the best delivery in the country in both leagues. Phenomenal left foot, so we knew that it'd be a difficult place to go to, and we had to try and just emphasise that we're only a goal behind, like, and half the tie was still to play, and there was no need to come out of the blocks and chase everything down and run for throw-ins and whatnot. If we can get a goal at any time in the 90 minutes and get the extra time, we'd be happy. But how it played out then with them getting the lad sent off after 10 minutes and then obviously another one sent off after 30 minutes, and at that stage we'd already equalised. We really thought we could have pushed on and won the game, but it didn't turn out that way.
Yeah, and of course your goalkeeper Paul Skinner playing a huge role in the penalty shootout, two saves. an experienced goalkeeper, maybe criticised at times by maybe supporters down here in Longford for his time at the club here, but he seems to have had a great season for yourselves.
Skins has been brilliant this year, yeah. Listen, he's been phenomenal. He's given us that bit of experience at the back that we needed. With quite a young defence. We've got Collie Deasy, who's 21, and for most of the season, we've had Conor Kane, who's 19, at left back, and we've had Kieran Kelly, who was 19 for most of the year, and he turned 20 in July there. So to have the experience with Skins behind him was brilliant. And listen, he produced the goods in the penalty shootout, made two fantastic saves. We practiced penalties the night before, funnily enough, and we'd missed about seven, so we were worried enough having missed the penalties, but Skins happened to save five of them, so we thought I might have stayed nil in the penalty shootout for quite a while as well. But luckily we finished off our penalties well, and Skins' saves were massive for us.
Yeah, and obviously you're talking about Paul's experience there. Sean Brennan in midfield, another hugely experienced campaigner, and he's been superb for the Drogs this season, it must be said. How important has his role in the team been?
Yeah, again, that was it. Like, we've got a lot of young lads in the middle of the pitch as well, and up top with Chrissy Lyons has been phenomenal for us. But Sean as well, with his experience, and he's popped up with some really good goals. And funnily enough, last night I think it was his only goal, from first goal of the season from open play. He scored penalties and free kicks all year, but he got on the end of a good cross from Chrissy and took a great touch and a great finish again, which got us back level in the tie. And his ball over the top then was reversed, his ball over the top for Chris then, that got us the second goal. So listen, he's been brilliant for us this year, and I think having the mixture of a bit of experience sprinkled in amongst all the young lads certainly has been a good enough mixture for us this year.
Yeah, it was a bruising encounter last night. How are the bodies today? Obviously, it's a very quick turnaround after this game on Friday against Finn Harps.
Yeah, listen, there's lads to be sore and stiff, and the other game on Friday was quite a tight game and a well fought battle as well. So I'd say a few of them will be feeling tired and stiff today off, and we'll be in tomorrow on Thursday and we'll prepare for Friday then, and we'll see how things go.
I think many would make Finn Harps probably the most consistent side in the First Division outside of UCD, obviously. How big of a test is this now for your team?
Ah, listen, I've heard it mentioned, and rightly so, that UCD is probably one of the best ever League of Ireland First Division teams, the one that's come up this year. And listen, Finn Harps finished 3 points behind them, and only for UCD equalising a minute after Harps scored. Out in the bowl in the second last day of the season, should they could have finished level on points. So it shows how well Ollie's done this season with Harps up there. As you said there, the consistency in the last maybe 3 or 4 months of the season was very good, and I'm under no illusion now it's going to be very, very difficult going up there, but or over the two legs and come to us on Friday first. But listen, we're in the tie, and that's the main thing, and hopefully we can get a bit of training done this week, a bit of preparation, and we look for better performances in these games than we did in the last two.
Yeah, when you sum it up like that, Tim, I think it really does emphasise the task that lies ahead. And should you get past that, I know you obviously won't be looking any further than Finn Harps, but you're going to be coming up against Limerick in a potential final. You're so close yet so far away.
Yeah, listen, it's just still miles away from us, to be honest. We played Harps 3 times this year, and we've beaten them once and they've beaten us twice, and again it's only been my odd goal in all the games, so again it's going to be very tight. They've got the experience, I suppose, of going up through the playoffs a couple of years back, and Andrada ourselves went up the year after that, I think, through the playoffs. So both teams will have players that have been there before, and I suppose just trying to get them to relax, and instead of playing the occasion, just play it like a normal game, and if you can keep their decision making right throughout the whole game, you're hoping that you'll put in a performance that you don't make any mistakes, and if a team's going to beat you have to try and make you beat them with a bit of brilliance as opposed to a mistake. If we can do that, then listen, we hope to stay in the tie in the home leg, and then never know what happens when we go up there the following week.
And I believe you'll be available now for this tie against Harps back on the sideline after your 4-match suspension.
Yeah, listen, the four games I got, listen, I can't say I'm about that, like, it's my own fault, and certainly something to learn from. As I said previously, I'm in the stand because of my own actions, so it's not really anyone else's fault, and it was definitely hard for the four games, but If you look with Kev on the bench, he has that experience as well of managing when he's at Shelton. He's been brilliant the last four games and he's won three out of four. And so it's like, oh, I owe a great deal for him for where we are at the minute. We do a lot of work during the week, but we know come match day, we're sort of singing off the same hymn sheet. And Kev's done brilliant, but it'll definitely be better to be back in the dugout where you have more of an influence than sitting in the sand.
Yeah, we spoke to Kevin on the show last week and there really does seem to be a great working relationship between both of you there at the club. And obviously we know of Kevin's ability from his time at Longford as a coach and a really top guy on top of that. But just on that band, Tim, it's your first season in the league. You're a rookie manager. You say there you're going to learn from the experience. Do you feel maybe you just should have stayed quiet instead?
I was wrong in how I expressed my feelings after the game, and certainly wrong with how I spoke to the officials as well after the game. So there's no one else to blame. Like you can't point the finger anywhere else but yourself, and it definitely is something that I will learn from, because rightly so I got punished, and it's been tough. But as you said, it's only my first season, and I suppose every single decision that goes in the pitch, whether it's a free kick or out and in the corner flag, the far end of the pitch, I'm arguing to try and get the decision to go our way. I suppose I'll have to just learn that. Keep calm and obviously concentrate on my own team rather than the decision that's going on around.
I'd imagine the supporters love to see that passion though, and as we've said there, you're a rookie manager in the league, so I'm sure it's been a big learning experience from yourself, but I think many people would agree it was probably a little bit harsh, the four games. But Tim, we want to thank you once again for joining us on the show. So much to look forward to from a Drogheda point of view over the next couple of weeks, and best wishes in those big games against Finn Harps and potentially Limerick after that.
No, appreciate that. Enjoy being on the show. Keep up the good work, lad.
Thanks, Tim.
BetweenTheStripes.ie is sponsored by Diaga. Based in Buncrana, County Donegal, Diaga are world leaders in top-class logo and graphic design, website building, film production, illustration, and much more. For further information, please visit Diaga.ie.
So, John, you got me so worked up earlier about the ticketing for the FAI Cup final, the lack of TV coverage for the playoffs. We were meant to play this interview a little bit earlier on, but we'll play it now. It's all the same. It's a fantastic interview. We were delighted to be joined on the line earlier by a long-time servant at Dundalk FC. Of course, league winner this season, and for me, one of the top performers, always underrated, I feel. But we're going to get his thoughts now on Dundalk's amazing achievement in the league this season. I'm delighted to say we're joined on the line by Chris Shields. Okay, folks, let's keep this show on the road, our Dundalk FC special tonight. And I'm delighted to say we're joined on the line now by Chris Shields. Chris, welcome to Between the Stripes LOI podcast.
Hi, thanks, lads.
So, Chris, obviously you're the longest serving player, I think I'm right in saying, within the current group of players under Stephen Kenny. How different of a club is it right now to the one you joined in 2012?
Yeah, it's myself and John are there since 2012. But it's vastly different now. You know, in 2012, Sean McCaffrey signed ourselves, and at the time he was going for a youthful setup. He thought that was the way to go in the league, and he quickly learned it wasn't the way to go. He had some great ideas, but just didn't have the players to execute them, I suppose. And obviously, what happened during that year. You know, there was this week without wages. People didn't know whether the club were going to come, like stay in business or come or go. And luckily, Andy and Paul stepped in and steadied the ship, and we managed to keep ourselves up on the last day with the playoff win in Waterford. And then since Stephen stepped in 2013, we've just grown from strength to strength, really.
Yeah, I often see a couple of Dundalk fans online, and they're always saying they reckon one day there'll be a movie made about this, the team that was down and out, and the two lads come in and take over the club, and from there it's a meteoric rise.
It sounds unbelievable now to think about Dundalk in the relegation playoffs, doesn't it?
Crazy. But Chris, when Stephen Kenny came into the club then, what was his initial message? I'm sure it wasn't, we're going to go and win four titles in the next 5 years, lads.
I can't remember. I came in halfway through pre-season 2013. I remember we were all kind of looking around the dressing room, and we didn't know what we were going to be. We thought maybe there was a few experienced lads like Steve O'Donnell, Mark Rostar, Peter Cherry still in the squad. As like that, and we were thinking, well, we might finish mid-table, we shouldn't be anywhere near relegation. And then, from there, we challenged for the league that year. We didn't expect that ourselves. But within Stephen, he had always maybe he might have thought that we'd challenged, you know, because he's had such a good eye for players and can see what he can always kind of pick out what a certain player can do better than anyone else. So you'd have to ask the man himself, because I think his brain works far differently than from a lot of ours. So maybe secretly he might have had in his head that we could challenge sooner rather than later. Just as players, we didn't really expect it.
Yeah, and I suppose for a couple of years during your time with Dundalk, you had to bide your time, but you've made a major breakthrough in the last couple of seasons, it has to be said. But was it difficult to keep motivated when you had players like Stephen O'Donnell ahead of you in the picking order?
Yeah, so I suppose in 2013, I was actually signed as a centre-back, but it didn't work out. I wasn't really cutting myself to say I was a centre-half, and then I missed a good 4 months maybe at the start of that season. And the lads really got motoring then into a team and went on this brilliant run. And I just think to myself, like, I probably won't break into this team for a good while. And halfway through that year, I got in. Midfield more or less became myself, Stevie and Richie at that time. And we worked well together. Stevie played more advanced then, and I kind of done the role I was doing now. And then the following year, you know, Stevie had his unfortunate injury with his knee, and I managed to break into the team. So in that year, mate, kind of holding down the sitting midfielder as my position. But I'd never say we played ahead of each other at times, myself and Stevie. You know, 2015, the two of us played a lot of games. 2016, within the European run and the league, we chopped and changed between the lot of us. And, like, the club wouldn't have went, the team maybe wouldn't have played as well. In some games with me playing, and some games suited Stevie more to play, and then some games suited me to play as well. So, well, it's been great to have Stevie to kind of, you know, learn off and get little pointers and things like that as I was kind of growing in and developing as a player.
I mean, this season, Chris, has been, well, it's been certainly as well as I've seen you play, absolute exceptional form. There's been some talk about Player of the Year as well. But what's behind the better form this year? I mean, Not that your form's been poor in previous years, obviously, but you've been outstanding this year.
Thanks very much. I suppose it's been the best I've played. You know, I've been kind of consistently playing well enough throughout the season. I say a lot of it for myself personally in the past, you know, year and a half, say midway through 2016 season, right through last year 2017 campaign. I was carrying injuries and was never really 100% fit. You know, we had that horrible groin injury, you know, the osteopubis thing, that's awful hard to shift, but you can kind of play with it, but it's always going to hinder you. So I'd done a lot of rehab work in the off-season, just gone and got myself physically right and came in a better shape than I had done in any pre-season campaign that I had. I got through a full pre-season campaign this year, which is something I haven't done in a few years. So maybe starting off right has kind of kicked myself on and carry through right throughout the season.
And John mentions there the fact that you've been talked about as a Player of the Year candidate, and rightfully so, it has to be said, Chris, but I suppose the two other players that most people are talking about are Patrick Hooban and Michael Duffy. Can you tell us, from someone that trains with them every day, just how good and how exceptional have those two players been this season?
Oh yeah, the boys are brilliant, you know. Like, you only have to look at Pat's goal scoring record, and it wouldn't matter what else he does on the pitch. You get me, but he does so much else. His hold up play is second to none. You know, he's a real fulcrum of the team. He's always an outlet as well. He's good in the air. He's everything you want in a striker. You know, that's rare for a hold up player that he can score that vast amount of goals as well. But yeah, you see him in training. He's one manly man. You know, he's he's not quite easy to get on with on the pitch and something like that in training. So there'll be a lot of arguments. But that's partially who he is. Maybe what makes him so good. And as for Mickey's a different kettle of fish. You know, he just plods along saying everything's great. Like, he's a manager's dream. He trains every day, rarely injured. It's excellent in training. What you see in training is what he's producing on the pitch, his goals, assists. And the two boys deserve the personal accolades that I'm sure they'll get at the end of the year.
Chris, it's been great having you on, but finally, just before we let you go, obviously when you signed for the club in 2012, you probably never thought you'd spend 7 seasons there. Going forward now, do you see yourself maybe finishing out your career? Obviously, you've many, many more years to go yet, but do you see maybe your long-term future with Dundalk?
Yeah, hopefully so. Hopefully they feel the same about me as I do for the club. You know, it's like you said, 2012, 2014, I hadn't a clue it's been so long at the club because I didn't know if anybody wanted me back after 2012. So I played 7 years at the club's great and enjoyed the success that I had that I never thought I would as a player when I was playing at Bray. And I couldn't imagine the accolades that ourselves as a team have won. I thought they'd never come. So I've this is my 7 year. I have another year left on my deal, and hopefully there's more on the table. Because where else in Irish football would you want to be?
Apart from Longford Town, of course.
Of course, yeah. Down to that section now eventually.
100%. Chris, absolute pleasure having you on once again for myself and John. Congratulations, an amazing season both personally and for the team. And we want to wish you the very best in that cup final coming up too. Thanks very much, Chris. So, John, it's that time of the week again. It's time for our St. Mel's Brewery prediction game. But before we go to that, I want to make our listeners aware of a competition we have running on this week's show, and our winner will be announced next week. I'm delighted to say the League of Ireland artist, a lot of you may know him, Barry Masterson. Check out his Twitter at Barry Masterson. He has given us, I'm sure you've seen it, John, on our Facebook and Twitter. We threw it up today on our Instagram as well. A fantastic print of Richie Towell. We're hoping maybe with some of the connections we have, we might be able to even get this signed for our lucky winner. And all you have to do to be in with a chance of winning this magnificent piece of art by Barry Masterson is leave us a review on iTunes. It really is that simple. Anyone that leaves us a review on iTunes will be in the hat for this draw and will announce a winner on next week's show. So please do give that a go. But John, let's go to the St. Mel's Brewery prediction game. I tweaked the rules last week in an attempt to try and get a couple of points on the board. Didn't work. But I'm going to stick with it and try and tweak the rules again this week.
You're cheating again. Because you're such a bad loser.
Yeah, a bit like Dick Dastardly, was it?
Dick Dastardly.
Dastardly, that's the one. I couldn't get that out from Wacky Races back in the day.
Yeah.
But let's go. We're going to go with over 2.5 and the result in this game. So any betting heads out there will know exactly what I'm on about. We'll start with the first fixture of three in the Premier Division this weekend, Cork and Limerick.
Well, I'm not a betting man, so you've just had to explain what that means to me. So but that's fine. Cork against Limerick, so I'm going to go for more than 2.5 goals and a Cork victory.
Right, Cork title gone, so probably going to be resting players now for the cup final. Limerick, so much going on there, you wouldn't know what type of performance they'll put in, but it'll probably be one to match their most recent performances in the league, which have been pretty poor. But with that in mind, that Cork will rest players, I don't think we'll see many goals in this game. Probably a small crowd too at Turner's Cross. Bit of an end of season feel to it. I'm going to say no to over 2.5 goals, but I still think Cork's reserves will get the job done.
Pats host Shamrock Rovers. I don't think there'll be a lot of goals in this. I'm going under, but I think Rovers will sneak it.
I agree Rovers will sneak it, but I think we'll see goals. While this is also an end of season game, I mean, Pats have nothing really to play for other than the fact they have a new caretaker in there who want to do well. Rovers already have Europe secure, but I'm sure they want to wrap up third place in the process. So I think we could see goals in this game. I have a feeling this could be a bit of a high scoring game. I'm going to go with a 4-3 win for Shamrock Rovers.
Wow, okay, the goals flying in, eh? And finally, Waterford host Dundalk. This could be the hangover derby, could it?
Yeah, the piss-up derby, I think, if I'm allowed to say that.
I don't think you are, Kieran.
We'll
say hangover that. Derby. We'll stick with that.
You want to go with the classy title. So Waterford Europe is secured. Dundalk, the title is secured. I think James Rogers summed it up brilliantly with his tweet, our former guest on the show. He said, is there any need to play this game at all? Can the lads not just go for a clatter of pints? So I think both teams might chop and change a little bit. Waterford, of course, got a win at the RSC against Dundalk very early on in the season, and I actually fancy them to replicate that in this game. I'm going to go with a Waterford win, but I'm going to say it'll be a low scoring game, under 2.5 goals.
Yeah, I think it'll be under, but I think it'll be a draw. I think both sides will cancel each other out in this one, so draw.
Let's bring you our final interview of the night from a Dundalk FC perspective. I'm delighted to say we're joined on the line now by John Mountney. Okay, folks, so it's our final interview from inside the Dundalk camp tonight on our Dundalk FC Champions Again special podcast. Delighted to say we're joined on the line now by long-serving member of Dundalk FC. It's, of course, John Mountney. John, welcome to Between the Stripes LOI podcast.
Lovely. Thanks, Kieran and John.
So, John, obviously you're a Mayo man and proud of that, but I'd love to ask you, how do you feel the football scene in Mayo is at the moment? Obviously, there's an underage side playing in the League of Ireland, but do you ever feel we might see a senior side representing Mayo in the league at some stage in the future?
Yeah, it's a good point, I suppose. You know, growing up and And playing football in Mayo, there's no real real stepping stone apart from, of course, the two nearest League of Ireland sides now would be Galway United and Sligo Rovers. So I suppose it is something that would it would be great to get in place down in Mayo, and something that is needed for young lads coming up down there.
And you moved pretty quickly from Mayo to Merview under Johnny Glynn. How did the move come about with that?
I suppose I was lucky enough at the time. I was playing senior football with Ballinagh Town back home, and we just won the Super League, and the manager of that team was Brendan Kenny. And I suppose I was lucky enough that Brendan was very good for young lads and wanted them to go on. So with myself, even, you know, he didn't try to tell me to stay another year. He was the one that was trying to get me to sign with the League of Ireland side. I think it was the night before the deadline. So lucky enough, it just fell into place then with Merview and Johnny Glynn.
Yeah, he's a very respected manager. I'm quite surprised he's not still managing in the league at the moment, Johnny.
Yeah, he is very respectable. He was. I was only with Johnny now for the year, but I enjoyed playing under him. You know, he was very good and very positive, and he was enthusiastic about things. So it was an enjoyable year, even though, of course, it was the bottom half of the table we finished that year. But I played the likes of that first senior year playing Division One League of Ireland. There was the likes of Rory Gaffney, who's playing in England now, and Pat Holborn was there. You know, there was some. And more, there were some very good players in the team.
Yeah, it's funny when we were doing a bit of research before, and we looked at the lineups around that time. We were like, Pat Hoban and Rory Gaffney up front. Wow, there'd be some strike force these days.
Exactly. You'd be happy enough to have that now again, wouldn't you?
John, obviously, we're just going on to now your time at Dundalk. This is your fourth league title at the age of 25. Where do you go from here? That's quite an incredible achievement when you think about it.
Yeah, well, I suppose I've just been blessed. You know, The first year here, of course, I was just happy not to be playing senior football and to be getting games regularly. And then, of course, when Stephen came in, I couldn't believe, even because I was only a young lad, it was a great standard from, you know, it was such a difference of standard. The first year, 2012 pre-season, I was only telling the lads the last day I couldn't get over the standard jump. Then the following year, when Stephen came in, the players he brought in. So I suppose I've just been lucky to have a manager like Stephen to be improving under, and then obviously the lads I'm playing with, I've just been blessed to be involved in a team like this.
We were just speaking to your teammate Chris Shields, who ironically is also there just as long as yourself, and we asked him about Stephen Kenny when he came into the club. Can you remember what Stephen's message was initially? Because I'm sure it couldn't have been that this team, or under his management, that you were going to go on and win four titles in the next five seasons.
Yeah, I, like you said, you couldn't write it. I actually remember the first time when Stephen came down to Mayo and I met him. I was only a young lad at the time. I was only 19, I think. And, you know, I'd experienced my first year with Dundalk, obviously not getting barely any results throughout the season. So I remember Stephen sitting down and I was chatting away, and I was like, yeah, like Oriel Park, you could make it a tough place for our teams to come. I remember he shut me down quick enough, you know, as in to say, like, that's not the style of football we'll be playing. And I couldn't believe it then. Of course, the way he wants you to play football is it really is enjoyable. So I think anyone that has played with Dundalk over the last few years, or even now, can tell you how enjoyable it is to play with them.
And obviously, when a team is doing so well, it's always the manager that gets the accolades along with his players. One man that maybe you don't hear so much about is Vinnie Perth, there as assistant. How good is Vinnie to work with?
Of course, yeah. You know, I suppose, like you said, like Stephen gets plenty of credit, and so do the players, plenty of credit. But I suppose the work that goes on behind closed doors is massive, you know. And being a coach, it's a tough role, because obviously you're the right hand man of the manager, and also you have to keep the players happy. So you're on both sides of the fence. And you know, Vinny does a great job of it. He's always put on good sessions for us over the years. He's always been, you know, got high energy out of us, and he's always all the lads, you know, speak highly of Vinny and enjoy it. So, I suppose we've been lucky to have, you know, a great manager, a great coach, and then even the other backroom staff. You know, everyone behind the scenes is wholehearted.
Yeah, myself and John here have just taken over the Arda under 14s here in Longford, so we might have to get King Kenny and Vinny on in the coming weeks for a few pointers. But look, John, obviously you've made a bit of a shift in position, I think it's fair to say, this season. You've been popping up in central midfield, whereas when you came into the club first, maybe recognised more as a winger. Have you enjoyed that role, and how big of an adjustment has it been?
I've played a few different positions, but you know, with the team that we have, you know, I wouldn't turn down, if I was getting a game, I wouldn't turn down any position, you know, because obviously it's so tough for competition for places at the minute. But I suppose I played in that position underage. I was always a centre midfield right up until Stephen came in, and then seeing me as more of a right sided midfielder. So, you know, it's not something. It is something I've enjoyed playing. And don't mind whether it has been in the centre or on the right.
And obviously the commentators now are going to say the season is over until November 4th, but for players like yourself, where there's so much competition in the middle of the park, I'm sure you're looking to use this next three league games that are remaining to claim a starting position in that November Cup final.
Of course, yeah. We've, like you said, Kieran, we've three league games left, and I can't see the standards dropping, in the sense that there's so many players that want to impress and like you said, want to get that name on the starting lineup for the cup finals. So there's plenty to play for. There's obviously records to be broken as well in terms of goals scored, and obviously Pat Hoban has broke the record for the top goal scorer. I'm sure he'll want to keep scoring as well as that.
Yeah, I think I might be right in saying, I was reading the other day, if he can get to 30 goals in the league, he'd be the first player to do it in, I think it's 60 years or something like that, something ridiculous. So I'm sure Pat will have his eye on that. But just on that cup final coming up, John, be honest, were you a bit disappointed the Bulls didn't get through the other night? Are you getting maybe a little bit sick of playing Cork City?
No. You know, obviously it was a tough game between the two of them, but like you said, we've played Cork the last few years now in the cup final, and it's always been a very, very competitive game. So it'll be the same again this year. It'll be a very competitive game, obviously top and second in the league, and there's not been much between us the last few years, you know, as you can see in results, and I'm sure it'll be the same. It'll be a tough game, and we're all looking forward to it as well.
John, absolutely superb having you on the show. Thanks so much for joining us, and once again, congratulations on what has been a magnificent season for Dundalk FC.
Lovely. Thanks, Kieran. Thanks, John.
Thanks John.
Between the Stripes LOI podcast is proudly sponsored by Flomax. For all your compressed air, vacuum and industrial equipment needs, simply visit flomax.ie.
So John, we were going to have a quick debate on the Ireland squad, but we really have gone over time and we're having a bit of issues with this laptop here, so we'll leave that for this week. We can always come back to it. Just before we go, I want to make you all aware of a very important appeal, the Zoe Murphy appeal, a young girl from Dundalk who requires €100,000 for life-changing surgery in the States. There's a GoFundMe page, so if you check out the Zoe Murphy appeal on Facebook, I'm sure you'll find that local girl in Dundalk, and the support of the Dundalk people has been amazing up there, but there's still a long way to go, so we really do want to try and make you all aware of that appeal. It's a very important cause. John, I think that's been everything this week. Quite a lot of interviews there tonight, a lot to get through, but another great show, and we're hoping that everyone will get behind us in big numbers.
Yeah, hopefully, because you know, we've worked hard. We're now nearly 80 minutes this show, Kieran. It's a long show, and we hope you really enjoy it.
Yeah, we do appreciate everyone that listens. If you can give it a share on your Facebook and your Twitter pages, it really does help the cause. As I've said, if you leave a review on our iTunes page, you'll be entered into the draw for that Richie Towel print. And of course, we're on Facebook, Twitter, you know the crack at this stage. Thanks again for joining us this week, folks. It's been a great week in the League of Ireland, and I'm sure there's plenty more action to come before the end of the season, and we will speak to you again next week.
Subscribe to Between the Stripes LOI podcast now on iTunes, Audio Boom, Mixcloud, Pocket Cast or Podcast Republic, and never miss an episode. You can follow us on Twitter at Between Stripes or like us on Facebook and Instagram by searching Between the Stripes. Add us on Snapchat. Our username is BTS1924. While for all the latest League of Ireland news and updates, you can visit betweenthestripes.ie. Until next week, thanks for listening.